नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we'll read the chapter summary first. So this chapter 14 is entitled Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. This chapter describes the prayers Brahma offered to Lord Krishna, who is also known as Nanda Nandana. For his satisfaction, Brahma first praised the beauty of the Lord's transcendental limbs and then declared that his original identity of sweetness is even more difficult to comprehend than his opulence. Only by the devotional process of hearing and chanting transcendental sounds received from Vedic authorities can one realize the personality of Godhead. It is fruitless to try to realize God through processes outside the scope of Vedic authority. The mystery of the personality of Godhead, who is the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, is inconceivable. It is even more difficult to understand than the impersonal Supreme. Thus, only by the mercy of God can one understand his glories. Finally, realizing this, Brahma repeatedly condemned his own actions and recognized that Lord Shri Krishna, the ultimate shelter of the universe, is Brahma's own father, the original Narayana. In this way, Brahma begged the Lord's forgiveness. Brahma then glorified the inconceivable opulence of the personality of Godhead and described the ways in which Brahma and Shiva differ from Lord Vishnu. The reason for the Supreme Lord's appearance in various species of demigods, animals, and so on, the eternal nature of the pastimes of the personality of Godhead, and the temporality of the material world. By knowing the Supreme Personality in truth, the individual spirit soul can achieve liberation from bondage. In actuality, however, both liberation and bondage are unreal, for it is only from the living entity's conditioned outlook that is, bondage and liberation are produced. Thinking the personal form of Lord Krishna illusory, fools reject his lotus feet and look elsewhere to find the Supreme Self. But the futility of their search is the obvious proof of their foolishness. There is simply no way to understand the truth of the personality of Godhead without his mercy. Having established this conclusion, Lord Brahma analyzed the great good fortune of the residents of Braj and then personally prayed to be born there even as a blade of grass, a bush, or a creeper. Indeed, the homes of the residents of Vrindavana are not prisons of material existence, but rather abodes envied even by the Yamis and Yogis. On the other hand, any home without a connection to Lord Krishna is in fact a prison cell of material existence. Finally, Brahma offered his whole self at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and, praising him again and again, circumambulated him and took his leave. Lord Krishna then gathered the animals Brahma stole and led them to the place on the Yamuna's bank where the coward boys had been taking lunch. The same friends who had been present before were sitting there now. By the power of Krishna's illusory energy, they were not at all aware of what had happened. Thus, when Krishna arrived with the calves, the boys told him, "You've returned so quickly. Very good. As long as you were gone, we couldn't take even a morsel of food, so come and eat." Laughing at the words of the coward boys, Lord Krishna began taking his meal in their company. While eating, Krishna pointed out to his young friends the skin of the python, and the boys thought, "Krishna has just now killed this terrible snake." Indeed, later, they related to the residents of Vrindavan the incident of Krishna's killing the Agaw demon. In this way, the coward boys described the pastimes that Lord Krishna had performed in his Maurya age, 1 to 5, even though his Pogonda age, 6 to 10, had begun. Shukadeva Goswami concludes this chapter by explaining how the gopis love Lord Krishna even more than they loved their own sons. So we'll start with text 1. Shri Brahmo Vacha.
Shri Brahmo Vacha.
No Mitya.
No Mitya.
Te.
Te.
Abra.
Abra.
Vapushe.
Vapushe.
Tadid.
Tadid.
Ambaraya.
Ambaraya.
Gunjavatamsa.
Gunjavatamsa.
Paripicha. Lasan Mukaya Vanya Shoje Kavala Vetra Vishana Venu Lakshma Shriye Mridu Pare Pashupanga Jaya. Shri Brahmo Vacha.
Shri Brahmo Vacha.
No Mityate Prabhu Pushe Tadanambaraya.
No Mityate Prabhu Pushe Tadanambaraya.
Gunjavatamsa Paripicha Lasanmukaya.
Gunjavatamsa Paripicha Lasanmukaya.
Avanye Shujakavaya. Vanye Shuje Kavala Vetra Vishana Venu.
Vanye Shuje Kavala Vetra Vishana Venu.
Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Shri Brahmo Vacha. No Midyate Brabakuche Tadidambaraya.
No Midyate
Brabakuche Tadidambaraya. Gunjavatamsa Paripicha Lasanmukaya.
Gunjavatamsa Paripicha Lasanmukaya.
Vanye Shuje Kavala Vetra Vishana Venu. Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Shri Brahmo Vacha.
Vacha.
No Midyate Prabhupushe Tadidambaraya.
Midyate Prabhupushe Tadidambaraya.
Gunjavatamsa Paripicha Lasanmukaya. Vanya Avanya Shraje Kevala Vetra Vishana Venu.
Vanya Shraje Kevala Vetra Vishana Venu.
Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Lakshma Shriye Mridupate Pashupanga Jaya.
Okay.
Shri Brahmo Vacha.
Shri Brahmo Vacha.
Lakshma
Sri Jai Mridupade Pashupanga Jaya.
All right. Shri Brahma Uvacha.
Shri Brahma Uvacha.
Lord Brahma said.
Lord Brahma said.
Nome.
I offer praise.
Idya. O most worshipable one.
Te.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Abra.
Abra.
Like a dark cloud.
Like a dark cloud.
Vapushe. Whose body? Tadet, like lightning. Ambaraya, whose garment? Gunja,
made of small berries.
Avatamsa, with ornaments for the ears. Paripitcha, and peacock feathers. Lasat, resplendent. Mukaya, whose face? Vanyasraje, wearing garlands of forest flowers. Kavala,
a morsel of food.
Vitra, a stick. Vishana, a buffalo horn bugle. Venu, and a flute. Lakshma, characterized by Shriye, whose beauty. Mridu, soft. Pade, whose feet. Pashupa, of the coward Nanda Maharaja. Angajaya,
unto the sun.
So translation, Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. O son of the king of cowards, your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Your garment is brilliant like lightning, and the beauty of your face is enhanced by your gunja earrings and the peacock feather on your head. Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves, and equipped sea leaves and garlands. So the pujaris can understand, you can put leaves in the garlands. The pujaris understand? Leaves. and it saves money too. And the garlands of various forest flowers and leaves. Repeat it again. And equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute, you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. So, you repeat. Lord Brahma said,
Lord Brahma said,
my dear Lord,
you
are the only worshipable
Lord,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And therefore I offer my humble
obeisances
and prayers just to please you.
O son of the king of cowards, your transcendental body is dark blue,
like a new cloud.
Your garment is brilliant like lightning,
and the beauty of your face
is enhanced by your gunja earrings.
And the peacock feather
in
your head.
Wearing garlands of various forest flowers and leaves.
And
equipped.
What again?
And equipped with a herding stick.
And equipped with a herding stick.
a buffalo horn and a flute. You stand beautifully.
You stand beautifully.
With a morsel of food in your hand. So purport by the servants of this divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the previous chapter, Brahma, the creator of the universe, tried to bewilder the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, by stealing his coward boyfriends and calves. But by a slight exhibition of Krishna's own mystic potency, Brahma himself was completely bewildered, and now with great humility and devotion, he offers his humble obeisances and prayers unto the Lord. The word kavala in this verse refers to a morsel of rice mixed with yogurt that Krishna held in his left hand. According to Sanatana Goswami, the Lord held a cow herding stick and a buffalo horn pressed under his left arm, and his flute was placed under his belt. So you can do that with the deity. Sometimes you can put the flute under the belt. Beautiful young Krishna, decorated with multicolored forest minerals, exhibited opulences far greater than those of Vaikuntha. Although Brahma had seen innumerable four-armed forms of the Lord, he now surrendered unto the lotus feet of the two-armed form of Krishna, who appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj. Brahma offered his prayers to that form. Okay, again, verse. No mityate brahma puche tadanambaraya gunjavatamsa paripichala sanmukaya vanyeshvaje kavalanatra vishanavenu lakshma shriye mrdupate pashupanga jaya. So, omaganatam inandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yenatasmai shikarana namaha. So here, Krishna's exquisite beauty is being described, and in order to describe Krishna's beauty, I wanted to have some quotes from his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, in the Nectar of Devotion. And I'm going to be not reading sometimes, and sometimes just paraphrasing what Prabhupada said, and which Rupa Goswami says, because Rupa Goswami is the author of the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that in the 21st chapter, it describes that Krishna has two types of bodily features. One type is covered. This is quite interesting. The other type is not covered. So covered means that sometimes Krishna dresses up as something else. So in this particular instance, I will read, in Dwarka, Krishna sometimes began to dress. Close the door, please. So Krishna sometimes began to play by dressing himself as a woman. It was interesting. So, because nowadays people do that too. But Krishna was playing like that. It's interesting. In Dwarka, Krishna was playing, dressing himself like a woman. And Uddhava, when he saw this, he said, how wonderful is it this woman is attracting my ecstatic love, exactly as Lord Krishna does. I think she must be Krishna, dressed up, covered by the dress of a woman. And also, you know, another covered form would be what had just happened in the pastime of Krishna becoming the coward boys and calves. Because the mothers of the coward boys became attracted to their sons, exactly like they were attracted to Krishna. And the cows became attracted to their elder calves instead of the younger calves, exactly like they were attracted to Krishna. So these are all like covered forms. So even when Krishna dresses up as something else or someone else, then that person or whoever Krishna is impersonating is just as attractive as Krishna is. It's interesting, isn't it? So that's why when we have the incarnations of Krishna, they're very attractive. Like when Krishna dresses up as Nrsimhadev, or as Kurma, or as Varaha, they're attractive. They're attracting us. But if we see an ordinary fish, it's not very attractive, is it? An ordinary lion, unless you happen to be watching Lion King, is not very attractive. I was on the airplane once, and there was this lion that was speaking on the screen. Anyway, there was a Lion King. So, it's not very attractive, because it's just a material body. But Krishna's body is such an Ananda Vigraha. Eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And then another devotee, so that's the covered feature. And another devotee describes when he sees the uncovered feature, that is Krishna's Krishna. How wonderful is the personal feature of Lord Krishna, how his neck is like a conch shell, his eyes are so beautiful, as though they themselves were encountering the beauty of a lotus flower. His body is just like the tamal tree, very blackish. And sometimes Radharani would actually embrace the tamal tree, thinking it was Krishna, in her ecstasy, Mahabhav. His head is protected with a canopy of hair. There are the marks of Shivats on his chest, and he is holding a conch shell. Such beautiful bodily features, the enemy of Mura has appeared so pleasing that he can bestow upon me transcendental bliss simply by my seeing his transcendental qualities. So as mentioned, this is also an incident of vibhava. And vibhava means that which stimulates. We were talking about this the other day. That which stimulates an emotion. This is alambana. That's directly Krishna. Udipana, just to repeat, is like something related with Krishna. Like if one sees the chakra on top of the temple, that's an udipana. One sees the temple. Or if one is very attached to the temple, if one just hears the name Hillsborough, that can be an udipana. Seriously. Because whatever one relates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is an udipana. All right, and then we'll go further into this chapter. And there's these are the qualities of Sri Krishna, Nectar Devotion, chapter 21. The first section describes Krishna's beautiful bodily features. And I'll read from Prabhupada's words. Any comparison of the different parts of the Lord's body with different material objects cannot factually be a complete comparison. You know, sometimes you use material objects like this. His thighs are like the trunks of the trees or something like that. It's not, you know, that's a simile. But basically, it's just to point you in the right direction. Sometimes in philosophy, you use metaphor or simile to help you understand things. For example, one is used in the Bhagavad Gita. Just like one changes clothes for something, jirnani, yata, vihaya. In the same way one changes bodies, right? But it's to help us understand. It's not exactly that you change bodies like you unbutton your skin. You know, so metaphors are similar according to the Vedic interpretation. The closer it gets, the better it is. But they're never a way to prove something or to disprove something. Sometimes you'll find people try to disprove what we preach by attacking a metaphor that we give. You understand? Because obviously changing one's clothes is completely different in many ways than changing the body. Because you change your clothes voluntarily unless someone rips them off you. And you don't change your body generally voluntarily. Yamaraj rips it off of you. So, anyway. So, here's some metaphors and similes. Said, ordinary persons who cannot understand how exalted are the bodily features of the Lord are simply given a chance to understand by material comparison. And of course, Lord Brahma is also doing the same thing in this verse, isn't he? He's saying, he's using these comparisons. Your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. Like a new cloud has a material color. but is to help us point us in a certain direction. Krishna's color is spiritual, and it's effulgent. A new cloud is not necessarily effulgent, and it's not spiritual. Your garment is brilliant like lightning. But just to help us, point us in the direction, you understand? Because to perceive, it's not that you look at lightning, that's exactly like Krishna's garland, a garment, sorry. But it points us, you know, this helps us remember Krishna. And it points us, using material examples, because that's all we can deal with right now. And the beauty of your face, all right. So the rest is actually a direct description. So here's some more metaphors. It is said that Krishna's face is beautiful as the moon. His thighs are powerful like the trunks of elephants. His arms are just like two pillars. His palms are expanded like lotus flowers. His chest is like a doorway. His hips are dens. And the middle of his body is a terrace. These are very poetic expressions. But it's not always like a literal expression. I'm trying to understand the difference. You know, literal and figurative are different. It's poetic to help us understand things. You cannot possibly use material words, or you cannot possibly in any way understand the glories of the Lord, because the glories of the Lord or the beauty of the Lord is unlimited. And the things of this world, the things we have experience of, are actually limited. So that's beautiful bodily features. The second one here, there's several different categories that refer to his body. Second one is auspicious characteristics. So there's a recitation. My dear king of the cowherds, a friend of Nanda Maharaj is speaking, I can find 32 auspicious symptoms of the body of your son. I'm wondering how this boy could have taken his birth in the family of coward men. Because generally, coward men don't have these auspicious characteristics. Therefore, this friend, who had been born into a Brahmin family, expressed his wonder how such an exalted child could take birth in a family of Vaishyas. So Nanda Maharaj's friend was a Brahmin. And he said, hey, Vaishyas? You know, passion and ignorance? Because Vaishyas are passion and ignorance. Kshatriyas are passion. And Brahmins are goodness. See, you have to see the body of someone to determine what their nature is. You know, you look at the body and it's just like, you understand. I mean, someone's in ignorance, it's pretty easy. And someone's a Vaishya. I mean, it is pretty easy by looking at someone's body to understand what their nature is. Of course, they can become Brahmins. Prabhupada said before, before you joined Krishna consciousness, your beauty was covered, and when you came to Krishna consciousness, then your beauty came out. And that's why sometimes people would ask Prabhupada, are these devotees or are your followers, are they Americans? Because they didn't look like normal Americans. Anyway, he pointed out the auspicious signs in the body of Krishna. He continued, this boy has a reddish luster in seven places. This is a description of Krishna's beauty. His eyes, the ends of his hands, the ends of his legs, his palate, his lips, his tongue, and his nails. Looking at mine, I don't have any of those symptoms, so anyway. A reddish luster in these seven places is considered to be auspicious. Three parts of the body are very broad. His waist, his forehead, and his chest. Three parts of his body are short. His neck, thighs, and genitals. Three parts of his body are very deep. So this gives you an indication of Krishna's voice. His voice. So Krishna had a very deep voice. Like that, interesting. Intelligence is very deep. And his navel is very deep. There's highness in five parts of his body. His nose. In other words, it wasn't a drooping nose. It was actually one of these high noses. His arms, ears were high. Actually, someone who studies faces can actually determine someone's character, personal characteristics. We had a devotee here who was expert 20 years ago in doing that. His forehead and his thighs are high. In five parts of his body, there is fineness. His skin, the hairs on his head, and other parts of his body, his teeth, and his fingertips. The aggregate of all these bodily features is manifest only in the bodies of great personalities. Another point is about the fate lines on the palm are also considered auspicious. In this connection, one old gopi informed King Nanda Maharaj, your son possesses various wonderful fate lines on his palm. There are the signs of lotus flowers and wheels on his palms. On his soles, there's the signs of a flag, a thunderbolt, a fish, a rod for controlling elephants, and a lotus flower. Please observe how auspicious these signs are. So we're hearing about Krishna's bodily characteristics. All right. And then moving ahead in the same chapter, not all of them deal with the bodily characteristics, the different descriptions, some of them deal with his other characteristics. Number six is ever youthful. Krishna is beautiful at his different ages, childhood, boyhood, and youth. Out of these three, the youth is the reservoir of all pleasures and is the time when the highest varieties of devotional service are acceptable. At that age, Krishna is full of all transcendental qualities and engaged in his transcendental pastimes. Therefore, devotees have accepted the beginning of his youth as the most attractive feature in ecstatic love. And actually, you see that with people in this world, the beginning of that youth, you know, when they're about 15, 16, they're most attractive. And of course, in this world, it goes down after that. It's all downhill after that. But in the spiritual world, Krishna is Navayovanam Cha. He's always youthful, like he's always like a 16-year-old youth, even in the battle for Kshetra. After 125 years on the planet, Krishna looks like he's 16. At this age, here's the description of Krishna's youth. The force of Krishna's youth was combined with his beautiful smile, which defeated even the beauty of the full moon. He was always nicely dressed, in beauty surpassing even Cupid, and he was always attracting the minds of the gopis, who were there by always feeling pleasure. Another characteristic about Krishna is he's very attractive to all women. Any person who has special qualifications becomes immediately very attractive to women. So here's a devotee making a statement. How can I describe the glories of the queens of Dwarka who were personally engaged in the service of the Lord? The Lord is so great that simply by chanting his names, all the great sages like Narada can enjoy transcendental bliss. So what can be said about those queens who are at every moment seeing the Lord and serving him personally? Krishna had 16,108 wives in Dwarka, and each and every one of them was attracted to Krishna just as iron attracted by a magnet. It's a statement by a devotee. My dear Lord, you are just like a magnet, and all the damsels of Braj are just like iron in whichever direction you are moving. They are following you as iron is attracted by a magnetic force. Pretty nice. And then finally, the 64th quality is described, because in this chapter, there's two chapters here that deal with the 64 qualities. The 64th is Krishna's exquisite beauty. This Uddhava tells Bhadura, my dear sir, Krishna's form was most wonderful when he appeared on this planet and exhibited the potency of his internal energy. His wonderful, attractive form was present during his pastimes on the planet, and by his internal potency exhibited his opulence for his striking to everyone. His personal beauty was so great, there was no necessity for his wearing ornaments on his body. In fact, instead of the ornaments beautifying Krishna, Krishna's beauty enhanced his ornaments. That sort of contrasts what Lord Brahma says. He said, the beauty of your face is enhanced by the gunja earrings. So in this particular case, I would say the beauty is brought out more. You're able to perceive it more. Not that Lord Brahma was wrong. Regarding the attractiveness of Krishna's bodily beauty and the sound of his flute, There's a statement by the gopis, although our attitude toward you resembles loving affairs with the paramour, we cannot wonder but wonder at how no woman could maintain her chastity upon hearing the vibration from your flute. And not only women, but even strong-hearted men are subject to falling down from their position at the sound of the flute. In fact, we have seen in Vrindavan, even the cows, the deer, the birds, the trees, everyone, have been enchanted by the sweet vibration of your flute and the fascinating beauty of your person. Here's even Krishna describing or appreciating his own beauty. In Lalita Madhava, it is said, this is Rupa Goswami's work, one day Krishna happened to see the shadow of his beautiful form reflected in the jeweled foreground, just a shadow. Upon seeing the bodily reflection, he expressed his feelings, "How wonderful it is that I've never seen such a beautiful form. Although it is my own form, still like Radharani, I am trying to embrace this form and enjoy celestial bliss." That's amazing. This statement shows how Krishna is an egotist, but that's all right. This statement shows how Krishna and his shadow reflection are one and the same. There's no difference between Krishna and his shadow reflection or between Krishna and his picture. That is transcendental position of Krishna. And then finally, the above statements describe some of the wonderful reservoirs of pleasure within Krishna as well as transcendental qualities of his personality. The transcendental qualities of Krishna are compared to the ocean. No one can estimate the length and breadth of the ocean. But as one can understand the ocean's content simply by testing one drop of it, so these statements will give us some understandings of Krishna's transcendental position and qualities. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 7, which we're going to be coming to pretty soon, Lord Brahma says, Prabhupada's actually quoting from the 10th canto here. "My dear Lord, the inconceivable qualities, beauties and activities which you have revealed by your presence on this planet cannot be calculated by any material measure. Even if one tries to imagine Krishna may be like this, that is also impossible. The day may come when the material scientist, after many, many births, or after many, many years, will be able to estimate the atomic constitution of the whole world, or he may be able to count the atomic fragments that permeate the sky, or he may be even to give an estimate of all the atoms within the universe. But still, he will never be able to count the transcendental qualities in your reservoir of transcendental bliss." So Krishna's transcendental qualities, transcendental beauty are so unlimited that, of course, it's described, as everyone knows, that Ananta Shesha is trying to describe them and understand them, and even he, with his unlimited heads, Ananta means unlimited, he's never able to come to an end of these things. And in addition, Krishna's transcendental beauty expands unlimitedly at every second, every moment. So even Krishna can't understand how beautiful he is. This is the nature of God. Chincha, inconceivable, and Ananta, unlimited in many ways. And actually, Prabhupada even said, if someone wants to say about Krishna, he's lusty, Prabhupada said, we can say he's unlimitedly lusty. So, anyway, on this happy note, so we have about 10 seconds left for class.
Only poetry can describe Krishna.
Yeah, poetry can give us a hint.
Yeah.
It points us in a direction, but you can't really, describing material beauty of some mundane person, you can actually do some direct description of it. The blood vessels under their forehead are beautiful, like whatever. But Krishna doesn't have blood vessels. Described in the Upanishads, Krishna is Ashnavi Ram, which means no veins. Everything is just like pure Satchitananda in Krishna's body. And Krishna sometimes will exhibit some bleeding to exchange rust with a devotee, like Bhishma was actually firing arrows at him, but that was just like Prabhupada said, like a lover biting another lover, which I don't know about anyway. So